Hi, I'm B.T. Newberg of the podcast The History of Sex. We explode gender norms by exploring their incredible variety across time. In today's culture of gay marriage, trans rights, and a new politically correct term every day, things can feel a little chaotic. It makes you long for the good old days. When men were men and women were women, and nothing could be more clear, right? Well, sorry to break it to you, but those days never existed. If there's one thing the history of sex teaches us, it's that sex and gender have varied fantastically across different eras and cultures. For example, did you know that the Nazis encouraged young women to bear a child out of wedlock for the fatherland? Or that pre-contact Hawaii had no such thing as marriage? Or that ancient Romans had no concept of orientation, only a vague sense of preference for one sex or the other? That's the kind of stuff that we'll be covering in our new podcast, The History of Sex. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get podcasts. The History of Sex.
You wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour, and thank you for tuning into the Twilight Histories on our 10th anniversary. Today, you will hear part 7 of Blue Dragons, which is one of my personal favorite shows, at least from my own work. But of course, you are the listener, and so you are the ultimate judge. I place my wares before you and bow deeply. If you really want to catch all the Easter eggs in Blue Dragons, I'd recommend you go back and listen to the older shows, and in particular, Ice Age Misery, Project Gleesa, The Winged Victory, and Roma Islamica, the last of which you can find in Patreon. As this is our 10th anniversary, I want to honor and thank our supporters. So I'm saving up my cash and giving away a ton of swag to our patrons. Anyone at the recruit tier or higher in Patreon is going to get a gift from me. We've got stickers, shirts, mugs, and hoodies. Right now, we have about 120 people on the list for gifts. And if you want to be on the list too, all you have to do is join us on Patreon. Seriously, if getting a ton of additional Twilight Histories stories won't spark joy, how about a Twilight Histories graphic tee or a mug with the Plague Doctor staring down your enemies? Go to twilighthistories.com and click through to our Patreon page to get on the list for your gift. Just be sure to remain in your tier without changing it for 3 months to qualify. And now, on to today's show, Blue Dragons Part 7, by myself, Jordan Harbour. You lean your shoulder into the Winged Victory and press as hard as you can. Your ancient limbs are weak, and your dead robotic arm hangs useless at your side. Thankfully, the plane is light, and it's headed on a downward slope. With a final desperate shove, it prattles down the old cement causeway and splashes into the sea. You pant, half from exertion and half from fear. The sky is alight with fire, and already the roaring, crackling sounds of wood and canvas fill the night. You can hear the alarm being raised. Screams carry from beyond the ridge, some angry, some in anguish. You shudder at the thought of Romans burning alive in their ships. But you had to do it. You had to light them on fire. The survival of your kingdom, and more importantly, your family, depended on it. And you did it. There's no time to dwell on it. You have to escape. The Winged Victory bobs in the gentle waves that lap the shore. You push it out and climb up its rigging. One of the propeller blades is your paddle. After hours of rowing with your one good arm, you're too exhausted to move and lie down on one of the plane's wings. You look back at Cyprus. The shoreline is beaded with fires. The sounds of mayhem carry over the water to you, making the carnage seem closer than it is. An image of Persephone flashes before your eyes. You pat the wing of her airship. "Take me home," you say, and close your eyes. "Take me home, or take me to death." You feel so heavy. It's exhausting to move, but you force yourself to wake. There are strange sounds, strange but familiar. Your heart beats in terror at the recognition of those unbelievable sounds. It can't be. Is this a dream? You pull yourself up into a sitting position. The winged Victory is half submerged in a swamp. The plants around you are yellow and green. The sky is thick and yellow. The smell is of rotten compost. This is Glise. Despite the heavy gravity, you leap to your feet and raise the oar like a spear. You turn around in a full circle, checking for predators. There are always predators lurking around swamps. It's the most dangerous place on the planet to be. You must find dry land. You must find your cabin. The winged Victory is stuck in the mud. You can't paddle it. You try to hack off one of the wings, but the bindings are too strong. You'll have to wade. There's no escaping it. If one of the swamp creatures grabs you by the legs and pulls you down, there's nothing you can do about it. You'll have to move fast. You leap into the water. It's deeper than you thought, and it's hot. You scream in pain. You must be near a geothermal vent. You rush as fast as you can through the swamp. The mud is thick, and the underwater plants nip at you with their razor teeth. You try to bat them away with your paddle, but you're not sure it does any good. You climb onto the shore, gasping from the exertion. You lie there, recovering your breath. You can still see the winged Victory, half submerged, refusing to sink, but unable to fly. That beautiful machine that came from your granddaughter's beautiful mind. You pull yourself up the ridge and into the protection of the thick yellow jungle foliage. You survived, for now. But you won't survive long, not without the robot. Your body is not evolved to survive on this planet. Sure, you can breathe the heavy, oxygenated air, but you cannot compete against the terrifying predators that live here. There are so many, and so many different kinds. It's as if you were a chunk of raw meat tossed into a pit of starving alligators. They all seem to smell you, and they come fast, night and day. You're surprised you haven't seen one yet. You pull yourself onto your hands and knees and crawl through the jungle, trying as best you can to remain quiet. You find your cabin. The robot made it for you many years ago. There's only a small hole for a door that can be covered with a slab of rock. The cabin looks ancient and uncared for. It's rotting, returning back to the jungle. Vines and trees have moved back into the clearing, so painstakingly maintained around the small cabin by your robot. Where is it? You approach the cabin. The slab has been rolled to the side. You can't trust it. Some creature might have made it its home. But you have to check. The roof is caved in. You climb up the side using vines and look down into the cavity. Five little creatures stare up at you, their flower-like mouths rimmed with deadly teeth. They're babies. You know what their parents look like, and you don't want them to discover you. You leap down and run back into the jungle. The robot leans against a tree. It's covered in vines. You try to pull the vines away, but they're thick and you're weak. "Come on," you say, and slap the robot in its metal face. Useless. You lift its head. The neck creaks with rust. Its eyes are dead. You manage to clear enough vines away to find a panel on its chest. You open it. Inside are small, grub-like creatures that have made a nest among the circuitry. They've eaten all the plastic, and the wires are frayed into impossible shapes. You lie down next to the robot and cry. There's nothing left for you here. No hope. You'll be eaten. Tonight. Or today, more likely. You might as well return to the cabin and let the baby creatures feast on you. They'll probably finish you off in seconds, rip your body to shreds in a ferocious frenzy. No, not yet. You won't make it easy for Gleesa to kill you. At least not that easy. You'll stay alive until this planet kills you. Maybe you can survive the night. Maybe you can build another cabin and barricade yourself in. Wait until the Twilight Histories pulls you out. The Twilight Histories. Yes, the Twilight Histories. You reach back and touch the port. You click it and feel the chip pop out. The chip is good. It's still good. You pop it back in. Come on, guys, you say. You make your way back down to the swamp, very carefully, very quietly. You don't want to, but you need to eat, and there are things you can eat in the swamp. There's a type of reed that doesn't have teeth and that's full of minerals. Imagine that. You, a human at the top of your food chain on your own planet, but here you're forced to eat reeds and bacterial blooms. So it goes. You see some reeds. You wade into the warm waters, swishing your propeller blade in front of you like a sword. A giant flying insect creature with one huge terrifying eye spots you. It turns and races towards you. You raise the propeller blade to smack it. It roars and opens a mouth full of rows of shark-like teeth. You cram the propeller blade down its throat. It bites hard and snaps the blade in two, then crunches it into splinters while hovering in midair. You try to run, but your foot is stuck in the thick mud, and you fall with a splash, face first. Tiny bubbles fill your vision, and your lungs choke with the thick, algae-rich waters. You push down into the mud with your one good arm, but it sinks up to your elbow. Your head is still submerged under the water. You thrash and choke. This is it. You're going to drown, or the flying creature will eat you from behind. You feel a clamp on your back and are raised out of the water. You choke and sputter, trying to scream, but instead cough, big raspy water coughs. You're raised high above the swamp and you cry in terror, ready for the teeth. You're turned around in midair, and the watery outline of a huge monster takes form in front of you. You rub your eyes. The monster is white. It's scaly. It's Zambros, you say. The dinosaur smiles.
Yes, little human, it's me. And it's you. You're old now.
He places you on the raft and takes his long pole.
What are you doing here, Zambros? It's time for you to move on.
Can you get me out of here?
Yes, and more than that.
Good. Fine, just get me out of here.
The old dinosaur laughs and presses his pole into the water.
The gravity is heavy here. How long did you live in this place?
Zambros, I'm tired.
It's okay, little one. You can rest. You've had a bit of a journey. A bit more than you wanted, I'm sure.
You lean your body against Zambros's huge leg and curl yourself in. You'll keep me safe, right? You say.
Of course, little one. Now sleep.
You wake with a start. You had a nightmare, but you can't remember it. Zambros's face fills your vision.
Good morning, he says. This is a beautiful place.
You lift yourself off the marble floor. Your body is young again, and you rise easily. You're inside a huge building. You recognize this building. There are massive marble columns, delicately embroidered, leading up to the wide dome. Doves fly in the rafters high above. There is the gentle sound of singing in Arabic. I remember this place. It's a mosque.
Yes, I understand you helped build it.
You look around at the pallets of marble and your old tiling tools, your trowels and buckets, a bronze tile saw. Is this Rome? You say.
I think so,
Zambros says, looking around him and rubbing his chin.
So interesting to see a human world.
It's not my world, you say. You pick up a trowel and toss it into a bucket of mortar. How did you get us here? You were rowing us through a swamp on Gliese when I fell asleep. What's going on? Why do I keep moving through worlds?
I know. It must be very confusing to you. Especially since you don't know why this is happening to you.
Why is it happening? Do you know? Where's my family?
Your family? Oh, they're all safe. They're all very safe and wonderfully happy.
Can you take me to them?
Not yet.
Why not?
Do you remember when you told me about higher dimensions?
Vaguely. That was a long time ago.
It was over 100 years ago for me.
100 years? That can't be.
We have experienced the passage of time in different ways. Come, let's walk.
This is a beautiful building. I'm very impressed you helped build this. Yes. How do you know I helped build this?
That will come soon. For the time being, I'd like to speak about dimensions. You were right. Although I believe you were wrong about the soul, you are certainly right about the egg existing in different dimensions.
The egg? Zambros laughs.
Yes, the egg.
It all comes back to you. It floods back to you. The last moments in the giant quicksilver building on Venus. What was it called? The regulator? Atmospheric regulator.
You remember now. Your memories are being unlocked. Certain memories were reserved, and now the egg is giving you access to them once more. You will have access to all your memories soon.
As if on cue, your mind races with memories which flood before your eyes. They flood in so fast you can't seem to capture them before the next fills your mind. You're drowning in memories. You can't speak. You can't think. You grab your head and close your eyes. You groan. The flood subsides into a trickle, and you can see them individually. Faces, events, textures. Your mind throbs.
I remember now. Good. Let's keep walking, shall we? I'd like to see outside. I've never seen Earth.
So, we're inside the egg?
Yes.
Then none of this is real.
Interesting thought. By what criteria would you judge something to be real?
Nina, my family,
They're fine, don't worry.
But they're not real. They're in the egg, just figments of my imagination.
Do you consider yourself to be real?
Well, yes. Of course.
You are conscious. You are aware. You can think and feel. Yes?
Yes.
But your body was destroyed. The Nestbot destroyed your body and brain with its laser. You are now a digital impression in the egg. Nothing else of you remains.
My brain was destroyed?
Yes. Your organic body is dead. The Nestbot thoroughly destroyed it.
Then, what am I? Am I real?
You have all your memories now. You have not lost the continuity of your consciousness. You are the same person in the sense that a person is at the center of the same point of view. But, Zambros, I'm just a digital imprint. I'm a bunch of ones and zeros.
You are, but not only. You are much more than ones and zeros. You are pure consciousness, and that is the most incredible thing in the universe.
In some worlds, you would be burned at the stake for saying such things.
I certainly hope this is not one of those worlds.
It is, unfortunately.
You step out of the great mosque through its massive portals and enter the dry heat of Rome.
There are people milling about in the plaza, mostly workers, but there are some women in black robes that cover their faces. There's a tortured body hanging from a pillory. Zambros notices.
Do these people torture each other?
Yes.
And what about the humans in the black robes? Are they criminals?
Well, it's complicated.
It's a very interesting society. In some ways, there is so much beauty, as with this building. But in other ways, it appears suppressive and violent.
That's a fair assessment, Zambros. You could probably make that part of your definition of humanity.
But you are not this way.
No, but I have been. I've had my moments.
You have killed and tortured?
I've traveled through a few worlds now, and from my experience of humans, they are very pliable.
Pliable?
Yeah, people kind of meld into whatever culture they're in.
Yes, I see. Your minds are very pliable.
That must make your species very good at adapting to different worlds. My species is much more homogeneous in that sense.
Zambros, I'm struggling right now. You said I died.
I said your organic body was destroyed.
It's the same thing.
Zambros is silent. You see a sadness flash across his face, but he quickly shakes it off. You look out at the people milling around. A group of workers passes right in front of you. They don't seem to even notice the massive dinosaur.
These are all simulations, you say.
No, they are real, Zambros says.
Do you mean they're real in the same way that you and I are real? They are conscious.
No, they are not like you. They are like me.
What do you mean?
They were generated from your memories.
You look at Zambros, and a realization strikes you. Zambros died. He was shot by the nest bots. He never made it to the pods.
You were made from my memories?
Yes, yours and Rama's.
Rama? Is she alive?
Yes.
So wait, you died? But your mind, your brain, also died. And somehow you're here reconstructed from my memories.
Yes, the original Zambros is dead. His consciousness is dead. I was reconstructed, as you say. I am exactly as you and Rama remembered me, though whatever internal thoughts and memories of the original Zambros that he did not share, those are gone.
That's very sad.
Zambros sighs, then smiles.
No matter how much you absorb of another being, can you have absorbed so much of them that when the primary brain perishes, you can feel that they did not totally perish from the world, because they live on in a second neutral home. What survives is a set of afterglows, some brighter and some dimmer, in the collective minds of those who remember them.
Though the primary brain has been eclipsed, there is, in those who remain, a collective corona that still glows.
It is from these afterglows that I was created, and I have you and Rama to thank for this.
So what you're saying is that the proverbial ball leaped from its track into me and Rama, and then from us to you?
In a sense, yes. It's an imperfect transmutation. I don't have any memories of my mother or father, or of my childhood, and that is a sadness to me. Yet I am alive and conscious, and that is something.
What about my family? They are also built from memories.
They were constructed the same way as I was, from your memories. But I should stress, once animated, they are fully independent conscious beings, independent of you, carrying on their lives in their own way. Do not be mistaken into thinking you control them, or that they are any less than you. You could think of the process like a cell that replicates its DNA before splitting. The new cell is no less than the old cell, and it is fully autonomous from it.
But they aren't the same people. My real family is still out there.
Do they love you more?
I don't know, but it's the difference between a real person and a fake person. Sorry.
Zambros sighs and looks down.
I'm sorry, Zambros. That was very insensitive of me. I think you're real. You are real.
Zambros turns and looks up at the mosque, squinting his eyes against the glare of the sun.
It's a beautiful building, he says.
You look up at it. It really is. You were very proud to be part of its construction, in your small way.
Would you like to see a higher dimension?
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour, and what you just heard was Blue Dragons Part 7. If you thought today's show was any good, I'd love to read your review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you're using. Before you go, remember, I'm doing a huge 10th anniversary giveaway. Shirts, stickers, mugs, hoodies, all Twilight histories, all the time. And it's coming your way when you join us on Patreon and support the show for 3 months. And in addition, you will also get access to a ton of shows not available to the public. Early access to new shows long before they're launched. For instance, our patrons first heard Blue Dragons 2 years ago. And you get to participate in creating stories, such as the show we're doing right now together, Labyrinth of Doom. Shirts, stickers, mugs, hoodies, secret shows, early access, building stories. It's our 10th anniversary, so come and join us on Patreon. Go to twilighthistories.com and click through to our Patreon page. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.
Gamarjoba, my name is Roberto. And I would like to sincerely thank you for taking the time to check out my podcast, The History of Saakashvili, Georgia. In all likelihood, I would venture to guess that you found us because you were searching for either podcasts, YouTube videos, blogs about the history of Georgia, or you're hearing this on another podcast, like this one. I'm both sorry and happy to report that this beautiful and fascinating country is, to my great surprise, criminally underrated in the history world. As of now, this is the only podcast I am aware of dedicated to the full history of a nation and a people that have served as the battleground for empires all throughout European and Asian history. But the land of the Kartveli is so much more than that. The birthplace of wine, the second Christian kingdom, the land of fantastic food, nearly superhuman dancers and musicians, and perhaps, most importantly, a people that have preserved their culture, pride and independence after centuries of one conquest after another. Empires rise and fall, but Saakashvili always seems to survive in the end. So, let us celebrate this beautiful land by coming with me on this journey from prehistory to the present day, right here at the History of Saakashvili, Georgia. You can find us on our website, historyofsacravento.com, or on Twitter at history_Georgia. Sacravento is spelled SACRAVELO. Now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.